Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our Latin expert, Mr. Richard Gobb.
I'm not at all sure I can qualify as a Latin expert or any other kind of expert. You can't live with inflation, was the complaint in a recent television commercial. However, I think because this conference is being held is proof enough that we all know we can't run away from it. There's really no place to run, and we can't hide and hope it'll go away. So we really don't have any choice but to live with inflation and try to make the most of it. Take advantage of it if we can, and defend ourselves against it as a minimum. For most investors, except during the last few months, the stock market has proved to be a very poor hedge against decline in our personal or business capital. Other speakers on the panel, I'm sure, will point out the job that gold has done, can do, and will do as a hedge against inflation. Other people have been successful in such exotic things as antiques and paintings and so forth. But my purpose today is to suggest that ownership of a well-managed business can be a productive investment in an inflationary economy. Really, I think the future of many professional managers is going to depend on their ability to cope with inflation, because that has to be their number one problem. Most of the participants on this panel are either investment advisors or economists, and I'm impressed with their credentials. I'm not an economist. My formal exposure to that subject is limited to an introductory college course about 25 years ago. However, I understand the answers haven't changed, just the questions. There are still multiple choice, and one answer is none of the above. As a CPA in public practice, I've had the opportunity to observe management techniques in dealing with inflation. This was particularly true during 5 years I spent in Brazil from 1966 to 71. And my remarks today will be based on observations of what I have seen business do successfully to make some headway in this kind of an environment. First, let's consider cash flow. We must minimize the time between fixing the selling price and applying the sales proceeds. While the selling effort is being made, costs are rising. While we hold the receivable or the cash, purchasing power is declining. Second, we must maintain liquidity in order to preserve assets and avoid excessive financing costs. This will require effective forecasting, both short-term and in capital budgeting. Finally, we must somehow hold to a minimum the tax bite extracted from the capital we can preserve. Let's look at the offer to sell. Establishment of prices in advance of sale and delivery may be necessary in your particular business, but it results in considerable risk unless your costs, substantially all of them, are fixed or very predictable. Fixed price sales contracts may not be practicable in periods of high inflation. If you sell through catalogs which are produced annually or even semi-annually, perhaps prices should not be included but furnished periodically as supplements. During my experience in Brazil, I observed many companies that quoted prices only at the point of sale, or that revised price lists monthly or oftener if it was necessary. Selling prices that produce a reasonable margin based on actual cost of the inventory may not be adequate in relation to the cost of replacing that inventory. This deficiency resulted in the demise of many small lumber companies in the 50s, who cut their stumpage into lumber and sold it at prices which were inadequate to finance the purchase of additional timber. Ideally, the price should be fixed when the cash is collected. This generally is not feasible, but the period of exposure should be minimized. Also, if possible, the sales price should be high enough to cover the cost of inventory replacement plus a reasonable profit. Use of the LIFO, that is last in, first out method of costing inventories, is a step in this direction. However, perhaps we should consider NIFO, that's next in, first out, as the basis of valuing our inventories, or of pricing our sales. Now let's look at terms of sale and collection. Having minimized the time between fixing the prices and delivering the product, we must minimize the collection period, which is influenced by billing procedures, terms of payment, and collection efforts. The bill should go out concurrently with the product, or in advance if progress billings are appropriate. Monthly statements as a billing practice can delay collection up to 30 days, and I think we're seeing that particular method, monthly statements, is becoming obsolete. This may be an expensive tradition when purchasing power of that receivable is declining at 1% a month. Billing departments which are days or even weeks behind certainly require attention. If your bills are going out with errors in addresses or errors in the bill itself, or the shipments were made incorrectly, you're postponing the realization of a sale for which you're already committed as to price, and these things can never be tolerated in a business, and certainly not in the period of inflation. In view of the present cost of money and rate of inflation, we need to reconsider payment terms. A 1% or 2% cash discount for payment in 30 days used to be an attractive incentive. Today, delay of payment for 60 or even 90 days may be more beneficial to the customer and more costly to the seller than the payment discount. Interest charges on accounts outstanding 30 days are becoming more common, and today may be a necessity. Failure to make such adjustments in payment terms can result in a deterioration in the actual value received that was not contemplated when the sales price was fixed. A vigorous effort to collect past due accounts is essential, always has been, not only because of the cost of money and inflation, but particularly now because of the increasing number of business failures. The asset that you're carrying may not just be declining in purchasing power, it may very well be in jeopardy. Use of lockbox services at banks has permitted a tremendous speed up in the realization of receivables and ought to be encouraged, particularly if you're operating in a large geographical area. Well, now that we've collected for the sale, what are we going to do with the cash? Holding it will cost us 1% a month in purchasing power. I have observed that well-managed Brazilian companies and increasingly more American companies operate with little or no cash balances. Some are actually negative and operate on the float, that is, on the uncleared checks. In fact, I'm aware of business that operate across the country, and they pay their East Coast bills out of West Coast bank accounts and their West Coast bills out of East Coast bank accounts and maximize the float. Bankers are not particularly enthusiastic about this practice, and it has serious risks when you consider the need for liquidity, which we'll talk about in a minute. But what should we do with the cash? We can pay off loans or contracts with unattractive interest rates, and that's probably a prime concern today when interest rates are falling. Realize available cash discounts or consider short-term investments, which recently have been quite attractive. Stockpiling sensitive raw materials may be desirable if shortages are likely or if price increases are likely. If we have freedom to increase sales prices, either market freedom or government freedom, inventory can be a hedge against inflation, certainly a better hedge than cash. Advanced production may be indicated if sales are relatively certain and labor disputes or wage increases are likely. Plant expenditures may be attractive or, in fact, essential. Improvements which replace rising labor costs with fixed costs, that is, depreciation, interest, and taxes, are particularly desirable. So is maintenance, which may extend plant life in this period of high replacement cost. Income tax considerations can be important in the timing of plant additions and maintenance. There are many uses for cash, but holding it is seldom the answer in the present environment. Let's look at liquidity. I have said we should liquidate receivables and cash balances as quickly as possible. We should also delay payments as long as practicable, but we can't do these things blindly. Lack of liquidity can quickly become insolvency or result in expensive cash programs to raise working capital. During periods of tight money, this can be disastrous. Effective forecasting of cash needs and availability has always been important, but is critical if we are to live with inflation. Short-term requirements should be forecast monthly for a year. Weekly forecasts are generally desirable, and they should be monitored daily. Long-term capital budgets by year for at least 5 years should be a part of management planning. An all-too-frequent pitfall for business is the use of short-term financing, that is, suppliers' accounts and bank loans, to finance plant additions. Financing such additions should be arranged so the proceeds from increased production can retire the debt. Further, there must be a realistic debt-to-equity ratio, particularly during this downturn in the economy. Short-term borrowings for long-term commitments may be prudent, but only if it is part of a realistic capital budget which provides for the ultimate refinancing. I recall in the 50s, again, when we had a depression in building and the price of plywood declined. For some mills, there was no alternative but to increase production to maintain the cash flow required to meet installment obligations. Lack of liquidity caused them to sell their product below replacement cost. In view of today's market uncertainties, a strong current position seems appropriate. This may mean paying a fee for committed but unused lines of credit and maintaining costly compensating balances. It may mean carrying short-term investments instead of expanding your plan. I'm not suggesting over-conservatism because that increases your inflation risk. Rather, plan ahead carefully and avoid over-commitment. It seems to me that there has been a shift in emphasis among some investment analysts, a move from earnings per share to financial position. In other words, liquidity is receiving more attention and earnings per share, the darling of the last 25 years, relatively less. Current yield and ability to finance continuing dividends has become a source of concern. Some analysts have even suggested the selection of equity positions in companies with little or no debt. This is a strong turn from earlier devotion to highly leveraged companies, that is, companies with high debt-to-equity ratios, which tended to have better earnings per share performance in a rising market economy. Certainly, there's a place for debt in the present environment, both short-term and long-term. The point is, we must have a realistic short and long-term financing plan so that debt we assume is appropriate and not a burden or threat to our continuing success. Now, let's just take a brief look at income taxes. If we assume an annual inflation rate of 10%, for every $100 of net worth we have today, we need $110 next year. But to have $10 more, we will have to earn $20 because about 50% of the increase through earnings will go to taxes. Such taxes are payable even though there was no real increase in net worth. This is particularly unrealistic in two instances, plant and working capital. When a replacement cost of our plant is two times or more what the original cost was, and we are permitted to depreciate only on the basis of original cost, then we have to earn substantially more income from the output of that plant in order to have enough left after tax to replace it. A similar thing is true with working capital. If our assets rise due to an accumulation of income, that may be due entirely to inflation, and there's absolutely no improvement in our working capital position at all, but nonetheless the increase will be taxed as income because the Our tax law does not recognize that these things are not income but only inflation. The Brazilian government recognized that much of what looked like income was not income. And here are two examples. Price level indices were applied annually to depreciable assets, and the increase was amortized as an allowable deduction for income tax purposes. Now, that isn't really permitting a deduction over the life of the plant for the cost of its replacement, but it did update costs in terms of current purchasing power and allowed as a tax deduction the write-off of the increased amount. They had a similar indexing policy with respect to working capital. Whatever was your net working capital at the beginning of the year, you could apply to that the cost of living index and deduct the decline in purchasing power of your working capital as a deduction in the current year, the only restriction being that the amount that you deducted had to be set aside as permanent capital. So they were both in providing a tax relief and encouraging the business to maintain a strong capital structure and liquidity. These were recognitions of economic facts of life. Now, our battle in this country with inflation would be assisted considerably if U.S. tax law identified inflation for what it was. In terms of property, we have the investment credit and we have some accelerated depreciation provisions available to us. But when you compare the write-offs permitted in this country for plant additions with those permitted in other countries, I think you will see that we're way behind as far as helping the cash flow of business. The same is true with working capital. The only meaningful item in tax law in that area is the use of LIFO inventories. So I would hope that if we're in the kind of spiral that's being projected, that some relief for business liquidity will be provided through some imaginative tax legislation. In the meanwhile, I think all we can do is use the tools that are available to us and make the most of it. Thank you.
Please stop your machine and turn your cassette over to side 2.